Now you're listening to The Morning Show with Aaron, and that is Amakura o Te Ao featuring Dane Scott, and we've got in the studio Arono Renata. Good morning.
Ai, kia ora koutou. That piece was called Amakura o Te Ao, as Aaron just said, and it featured actually Pau Tokomanoa, Atawhai, Rua Pick, and Dane Scott. And it's taken from an album called Kiki Ponamu. There are currently three that have been that are available. And this one is, from what I understand, was recorded in the South Island. The kōrero around this piece, I'm not really wanting to speak about the taonga pūoro that were played, but the combination of sounds at oro that we're being exposed to through that portal from those practitioners of these particular types of instruments.
Can I ask a broader question to start with? What if we had to categorize that piece of music, how would you categorize it, just to give people something to latch onto?
So it's really of an indigenous origins and comes through what my understanding is, one of the original iwi of Te Waipounamu, the South Island called Waitaha. So Waitaha is Waitaha. The water bearers, that's one of their characteristics. Wai, water,
yeah.
Taha, a calabash. Barry Brailsford wrote a text called The Song of Waitaha, which was a limited edition. So only, because it's a limited edition, there's not many copies available, but I have one
you
myself.
Have one.
From that time. An extraordinary piece of work that was gifted to him to write by the kaumātua, the elders who were alive at that time, and gifting him that mātauranga and those pūrākau from another whole nother time zone.
So how long ago was when that happened?
The book itself, 1990, around then, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd have to look. And so,
so the Komata were in touch with a much older...
Much, much older.
Part of the culture.
And they gifted into this part of that story, that very, very big story, is within the pages of that book.
Okay.
And through then, Barry Brailsford.
And so this piece that we just played is built on that?
I think...
Or followed on from
the
that?
Waitaha, the people of Waitaha have there's not much information available on the actual cover of the CD regarding the instruments that were played. However, you can go into kikiponamu.bandcamp.com.
Yep. Yeah, so go to Bandcamp, and there's a world of music in there, literally.
Absolutely. Opening up a very, very important portal going forward in terms of taonga pūoro. I'd like to share with you now something. It's a karakia kai for autumn. So he karakia kai mo te ngāhuru. You can find it in a beautiful pukapuka that has been produced locally by Te Mauritau.
Yep.
Called Koau, Kokoe, Kokoe, Koau. And yeah, I wanted to share that with you before we go any further as well. Goes like this. Ko whānui e, ko whānui e. Ko ngāhuru kei runga, ko ngāhuru kei raro. Ngāhuru kai painga, ngāhuru kai pāeke. Ngāhuru tiko tiko iere. He kura kai, he kura tangata, he tōnui te kai, he tōnui te tangata. Nau mai e te kai, haumi e, hui e, tāiki e. The first line, whānui, just a little bit of in translation for those of us who require that. Vega is a constellation which appears at this time of the year in the southern hemisphere, and it's referred to because of the change going into autumn, into winter, into the Māori New Year.
So the Māori name for that was whānui?
Whānui.
Yeah.
Whānui. Alpha
Lyrae?
Lyrae.
Is that like Latin or something?
It's Latin.
It's an old language, yeah.
Yeah, it's Latin.
So that's a guess, folks. Lyrae?
Yeah, I didn't want to pronounce.
Yeah, no, you left it to me.
Although I do know what it is. So it's really speaking about the abundance of the harvest. And it's a really interesting, what am I going to say, regarding this time we call Easter, because it's not really the celebration of fertility. That's a northern celebration, and that whole thing around the rabbit and fertility and the Easter egg.
New life.
That's a spring festival.
Yeah, it's 6 months out, like everything that we've imported.
Well, the import really it messes with the consciousness of what really is happening. And we are going into ngāhuru, into harvest. We're not going into spring.
Yeah.
So I'm not confused, but I think that when you import those types of celebrations and festivals, you need to be really clear with particularly our mokopuna, our tamariki, that they're vibing and celebrating something which is completely out of rhythm.
Mm.
From where we live, as you said, an imported celebration. There's no need for it, really. We've got our own knowledge base that we can refer to and celebrate.
There's a lot to unpack about how we ended up in this situation, because it's not just the colonial factor; it's the co-opting of religions and placing them over, you know, hundreds of years ago. And taking one festival and putting it on top of another festival actually that was an act of colonialism as well in a way. So
I just wanted to ensure that there is something there that you go oh true. So should we be? Yes, we should be celebrating autumn, ngāhuru. And within that, there are many, many offerings of ways that we can do so. The harvesting of food and from the land is no easy task. You really do need to know what you're doing when you bring food in and you're going to store it for the winter.
Yeah, yeah.
So that it's stored properly and that it's available during the winter, doesn't rot.
Mm. And Tomorito again. Tomorito made a film about kumara and
an extensive film,
the storage and complete look at how and does remind you how important it is. It's easy for us, we go to the supermarket to get our food, but for those times you had to make sure the harvest survived the winter.
Yeah.
And the food had to survive all the way through the winter,
survive really and really hold its own nourishment, and that knowledge hasn't been completely lost, because there's several places that are picking that up and really harnessing it and making it available to Rōpū, to iwi, to those who wish to go down that line of in terms of those practices.
Mm.
Mm. Really, really important. It's a really important DVD, that one.
Yeah, I wonder if it's on. I wonder if they've put it online by now.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I have a coffee.
I'll do a quick search now, but I'm not going to do that. Yeah.
I have a coffee. Oh, I wanted to follow on talking about Taonga Puoro and that whole area of development that's currently really happening on everywhere.
Mm.
It, depending on if you're in that zone, of course.
Well, yeah, and you are deep in that zone, it seems to me.
Pretty much harnessing what what going forward, contemporary, both what was give, what is from the past and what is possible going forward into the future. There's a significant wānanga taking place at a marae below, well, near Pirongia, called Pūrekireki. Tomorrow is the Pōwhiri, and it's a Haumanu collective. So it's been initiated to enable practitioners and those who are connected to that kaupapa to come together and over a period of 5 days have exposure to significant speakers, practitioners. Also, on a practical level, my understanding is because of the, I know the marae itself, you know, the whole setup, is there's areas where you can set up a workshop if you want to take your kit that you actually make instruments with, and you can do so.
So this is part of a revival of traditional instrumentation, traditional music.
It's a huge revival. Mm. It's just extraordinary. What there'll be sounds that won't, as you heard at the beginning,
yeah,
quite unfamiliar to us because of our ears have really been turned to the northern music.
Well, pop music, basically. Well, most of us are listening to pop music. That's what I've been playing all morning, kind of.
Yeah, it's a totally different vibration, or they call it frequency. There's many other, you know, kupu Māori as well that we use to express. There are words within our own reo that express those frequencies, and the return of them has become an essential journey going forward to offer out to our to an audience which is intergenerational the possibilities of healing or the significant understanding around how healing can take place through those oro, those sounds.
Okay, so this ties into, we often talk, I mean, plant medicine is kind of your world as well as this. So tell us a little bit more about how the healing works with the taonga pūoro.
Well, that's actually part of the indigenous science field that is going to be funded. A significant amount of funding is going to be poured into that so that Western medical instruments can be used not for validation but to show how those work, they work on the different organs of the body.
Okay.
The heart rate, how and those instruments that are currently used every day in Western science to validate what is happening there, and that's how it happens. You know, that Western science has had a significant amount of time and, research-based exploration.
Well, the ability to get into the detail and find out all the details of the mechanism that...
Yeah, well, they've already had.
We can see connected. We can see things happening,
and validating is, through that data.
Yeah,
we're looking to absolutely use those instruments as another way, a tool, to say, well, yeah, here's the data. This is how it works, and this is what it does.
So, what do you know from pre-European times about how taonga pūoro was used for healing?
Well, that's a very, very good question because, to be honest, I don't think people are really aware of how many of taonga pūoro are actually tucked away within the museums around the world, but there's hundreds, thousands.
Oh, for safekeeping,
yeah,
I say so sarcastically.
So you never hear them, you never know about them, but there was an extraordinary focus on oro. Not only for pre-European, way beyond that time, you know, the human family have been exploring with sound through bone, wood, stone, many natural materials or from Papatūānuku to express, to listen to hear, to experiment with, to have as part of their daily life. Because, you know, they had a very different lifestyle.
Mm.
So yeah. they weren't exactly, you know, getting up and boiling a jug and turning on the television and things like that. So those, the ability or the time frame of exploration within oro and those working with those materials was very different to manifest an instrument.
Are some of those old instruments coming back?
Oh yeah, very much so. But also with new energy. So I recently as 2 days ago, have now seen a pukaya with the main trunk of the pukaya, which is a type of trumpet. Trumpets have been with us in all cultures. All ancient cultures talk about a trumpet or a clarion, pukaya.
Using the breath to make sound.
And you know, a particular type of instrument.
Yeah.
This one had a significant part of it is made from glass with native timber on it, you know, and just extraordinarily beautiful. But the sound, the oro that came from it was also, that's adding an ancient material. what's glass made from? Sand.
Yeah, when the Māori came in contact with Europeans, did they discover that, like, this glass is a technology, and they're like, we can use this?
No, this is in very recent times. This is very contemporary. Recent.
Oh, you're talking contemporary, okay.
Yeah, very contemporary.
So that's happening now, is the use of new technologies and materials to produce the same instruments, or similar?
Similar instruments, and to speak to them and really understand the expansive field of oro that's available to us. I would say that it's also to make it available to the unborn child. That's another whole field, so that those who are still to come into to be born will have exposure to those oro, but that's also a pre-European aspect of some of the pūmotomoto, which was an instrument that was used in that particular way for the unborn child.
You do hear of people playing music to their unborn child.
Yes, you do, but it's kind of very more technology in Western instruments. But we also have a whole series of instruments that was devoted to the unborn pepe that are coming back, come very much there now.
A lot of the modern stuff is very much focused on if you play this type of music, it's good for their brain development and their IQ, and that'll be good for their education. People are always trying to sell things like this is good for your child's education, even your unborn child's education, That's a very modern thing to focus solely on the education.
I imagine
it wasn't like that previously.
No, I think with the Western science technology that we have, we're giving out information to a mother who's going to give birth some very challenging information around the development of the unborn. And I believe that if Māori have an input at that point, that information around, like, brain scans, you know, and saying, oh, actually, when this baby's born, it's going to have cerebral palsy. When this baby's born, it's going to have... And, I mean, how it's not... There was a time when you wouldn't be given that information because the technology, Western science, wasn't available. So I believe that we are proposing somewhere down the line that we can take that bit of information and use oro to transmute and transform that situation for the unborn.
Okay.
Yeah, because it's such a powerful field. That's all to come. It's going to come.
So you
through.
Know people who are working on this
I know,
at the moment.
Yes, yes. It's well, it's a big field because Western science has really had all the pūtea.
Yes, it has.
Yeah, it has. It's had a significant amount of the pūtea to make mistakes.
Yeah.
And they've made a lot of mistakes, and they haven't really, I don't think that's.
It's not so much the science. I would point the finger at the need for profit and power getting in the mix, and so the science, you only study certain things, because if you study that, you put research effort into that, the company can't make any profit from it, so there's no point, it's never going to get funded. So right at the start, it distorts what's been looked at, and then when you're still wanting to make as much money as possible, then you're promoting certain things that might not have been that beneficial, but they're certainly profitable. So that's where the distortion comes in. And we have, and there's lots of arguments in the Western world of people who don't trust science anymore, and scientists are going, how can you not trust science? It's not the word of God, but they act like it's the word of God. You know, you can't challenge it. But the problem is not the science. The problem is the influence of power and the influence of money in that world. And it's so shaped us. This is what I think. It's so shaped us that, like, we play music to our unborn child because we think it's going to be good for their education, which is solely focusing on the type of education you get in school where you're learning things. And it misses the holistic look at a human being, which I presume most Indigenous cultures, and indeed our culture, probably used to as well. You know, have a much more global, big picture, holistic look at what a human being is and how to help with all of that.
Yes, yes. It's been so dangerous, that portal of just focusing on that aspect, as you called it, education. It's really denied that whole growth of an acknowledgement of those who hold many other pūkinga, many other gifts. They're not seen. They're not even given.
They're not valued.
Not valued at all. And I propose that that's where we will place our energy. We are placing our energies. It's in that very huge part of who we really are.
Yeah, and you can see from what I was saying that within English, I even struggle to talk about. I have to give a big long explanation for what I mean, because we're not very familiar with discussing that. I guess we call it character development of a person. You know,
the potential of the human family, of the unborn, and then to be born into Te Ao Marama, we consciously already understand within many Indigenous cultures that you're here for a reason. So your journey is important already before you arrive. So and we'll wait for you. We're waiting for you. So it really acknowledges something quite different there's another kid in the family. Oh no.
Right, this one came with a purpose.
We all come with a purpose.
Yeah. I mean, each time you say this one came with a purpose.
Yes.
Yeah.
And to offer that rungoa to an unborn is a very significant portal of growth that, there's our pēpi who are unborn and then become born, struggle. Struggle. So we're looking, we want to look at aspects of how that can unfold in a much more healthy way. Just healthy for both, for everyone involved.
And I think that's such a good message for, like, the child who's at school and not getting very high grades, that the message that you've come for a purpose. And it might not have anything to do with what you're learning here, that there's more to the world. And that because you're not, the fact that you're not doing very well, good at this stuff, means that that stuff's just not your purpose. It's not, it doesn't mean you're written off as a person, which I feel like is the subtext that's a message a lot of people get, that they are not worth so much, they're not as valuable, not as useful to the world, because they haven't done very well at this thing, this academic education.
I think contextually the system that has been in place, or that was also imported through, originally it was a Sunday school model that we adapted and then developed, has really not spoken to the whole being, you know, as you're discussing, of the child. So you have one speaker, which is the teacher's voice.
Yeah.
It's the only voice generally. It's always the teacher. So the teacher knows things, and the child is always the student, the tauira. That's not a model with an indigenous understanding. That's not how it works.
Yeah.
And also the way that you grade, the tamariki are kept within their age groups too. So then they're not around others who are younger, and throughout their whole day of schooling, that only happens in the playground because, you know, the eight-year-olds are together, and it doesn't give them an overall experience of, oh, this is normal. It's not normal. It's absolutely unnormal.
And they get the message that they're not, even in the playground, they still hang out with the ones who are the same age. Because it's easier to make friends with the people you're in the class with all the time, but they do get the message they're not meant to mix with the younger ones. You know, you look down on the younger ones, don't want to play with them.
Yeah, you know, or they have completely different needs on the spectrum. Well, that's... they do have different needs, that's true, and that's why it's very important to weave amongst them and to be with them on a more regular basis than the Western education system has practiced. It's been unhealthy for both, for teachers and children, although I don't know whether mainstream teachers would agree with me, but we certainly have some really hard thinking to do around our mainstream education system in terms of healthy human beings going forward. And
it's not I don't think it's a discussion that most of the cultures really to have. I mean, the National Party just released its education policies a couple of weeks ago, and it was just focusing on getting back to basics, they call it. So there's no, I mean, you're not going to get that out of a mainstream political party, I should admit, but it does kind of, it shows where the focus is. It's the repeat focus on getting back to basics and never asking the question, what's the point of this education, and why are we following a model that was developed during the British Imperial expansion 200 years ago or something. My dates are not very accurate there, but the education system was designed to turn out people who could operate in the bureaucracy of that time, and you certainly needed to be able to read and write to do that, because everything was read and everything was written. But we obviously live in a vastly different world. I think most people can cope with that idea that the education system is based on something from a long time ago. And while a lot of modern stuff's come into it, the basic idea of it is still that very old idea.
Yes, I think then there's a lot of trauma associated with that very fact. If you can't read,
if
you can't write,
yeah.
Oh, how can you know stuff? Well, that's a very, very small part of the human field of knowing. Knowing things.
You know what you do better in our world now? You do better as someone, if you can't walk, your options for your life are greater than if you can't read, which is an interesting contrast. You know, you'd expect someone who can't walk to have a very limited life, but it seems to be more limited if you can't read in this world.
Yeah, and there's an assumption too around reading is about an alphabet. So there are many ways of reading the world that are not related to that type of script, you know, scripting, reading a book.
You're right.
So we're talking about
reading
a book.
We can read words on a page, but there's a lot else to be read in the world.
There's a lot else that is read and understood, but not shared so much because it's not valued. So I think we're coming into a time when those questions are really important to ask, and Western science is not to be in charge of them, because they will break them down, as you say, into they navigate quite an interesting way of going to a smaller point of reference instead of opening it up and accepting that, oh, this is quite a vast field.
Yes, you become the expert on, and the more of an expert you are, the narrower the expertise is, and you certainly might know, and you certainly do know a lot about your particular area. But yeah, there's so many complicated issues to discuss, and I think being exposed to a different culture makes it easier to see. It's when you if you can step outside your own culture, it's much easier to look back and see the good things and the bad things. And see what you might want to change. So, like the education system, you're talking about reading. Like I've talked many times about, my children were homeschooled or unschooled most of their childhood, and then went to school for the last 3 years because they chose to do NCEA. But they, neither of them learned to read on the timeline that is expected at school. But I'd read stories from parents and who were slightly older than us, and their kids were just waiting for their kids to learn to read, trusting that at some point it would just naturally happen that they would want to learn to read. And some of them had to wait a long time into the teens, but it always happened. And my concept of it is just that the brain, like, you know, we're used to the idea that our bodies develop at different rates. We don't expect all the kids to grow at exactly the same rate and have their growth spurts at exactly the same day. So our brain, I'm assuming our brain does, is the same. And it is. And I've seen lots of homeschooled kids. Some kids want to learn to read at 4 and others at 14. And it is literally that diverse. But they all learn to read. And when it's their time, they just seem to suddenly know how to read. It's really strange. Because I remember it's going through school, you get the idea that it's a real struggle to learn all this stuff. You've got to work really, really hard. And I've watched many kids just suddenly, all of a sudden they know. All of a sudden they're interested. And they just go and do it themselves, and they don't need much guidance at all, and they certainly don't need reading recovery programs, which I think is what happens to kids who are basically traumatized by the fact that they can't read when they think when they've been told they should be able to read, and they get phobic about it. That's an experience that we've had at our place.
Yeah, that field of neuroscience, which is more common now to speak about things in terms of that aspect of the brain, the hinengaro, and being able to collect data from that portal, is what Western science proposes. That's how they collect data, you know, and then they present it back and say, well, we can prove that this and this happen, and this is, you know, this is good, and this is how it works. Because the tools that we have developed have shown us that. But that's fine, except it doesn't acknowledge also that there was a way of knowing before the Western science tools were developed. Sure, I will say that Western science, the machinery, the technology has polished Indigenous knowledge. Through that portal, but it's also lacks the ability to acknowledge that this whole field of Indigenous world is always present and always has been. No acknowledgement.
What's the level of frustration in you with that situation?
I'll just continue to speak about these things in a more genuine way. So we really understand the way that things have tipped upside down. I mean, the simple fact that we practice a spring festival, fertility, and we're going into winter. You know, I just go, why would you do that? Doesn't, you know, I just continue to put that out there. So place frustration. It is frustrating. Because it corners you to watch the children, you know, playing with these when you see them, you know, having an Easter egg hunt, think, okay, I'll go with this. Yeah, this is what's happening, but don't actually believe in it.
So was there, in pre-European times in Aotearoa, were there, what were the...
Well, so the relationship.
Am I asking about spring festivals here? I guess
no. Well, the whole relationship was to look at the constellations, which were highly the diary. They were the ancient diary of the ancestors.
It was the calendar you looked to.
That was it. You know, you didn't log into a social media portal and go, "What's the name of today?"
Well, we didn't used to either, but.
And you know, and then go, oh, of course it is, because look, I can see that. It was what the constellations, where they were placed, who they were, you know, they were known, they were understood because they were experienced. And so that was, you know, a rhythm, the rhythm of the collective. It was a rhythm of the collective, not the individual. And that's another major difference.
There's kind of two things. I feel like there's two things you're talking about. There's the fact that we've imported our holiday festivals and they're 6 months out of line. But there's also, now you're talking about the rhythm of life. And we're talking pre-modern times was determined by the natural world. And now we live in modern times. Our rhythm of our life is not determined by that. It's determined by our cell phone, our smartphone, which tells us the time. It tells us, I mean, I've got an alarm on there. It tells me when to get up. All that sort of thing. And even before the smartphone arrived, the rhythm was still determined by an industrial system, I guess.
That's an important word. You know, when I'm thinking about the journey of rungoa as a kai rungoa practitioner, industrialized, everything's become industrialized, and how do I take that slate away, you know, make the slate so I can place what I understand to be happening right now that is really not related to all of those things you spoke about.
So you're trying to relate your life to the natural patterns of the world.
Oh, I do. I do. So it makes it easier for me to understand those what do you call those tug of war with why things are not aligning. I understand, and you say frustration. I don't know.
Well, that was again.
I just know that it doesn't align, and I go, okay.
You're going that way, and everyone's going that way.
I don't think everyone. I think there are some.
Well, many are going that way, and you're like, where are you all rushing off to now? Like, is that kind of how it feels? Like,
it can do.
Why are you paying so much attention to that at this time?
It can do. You just have to bear in mind that that's the rhythm, and then you have to harness what you believe to be so and stay grounded. Mm. Grounded in that. So, you know, you propose to yourself, I will do this because this is what needs to be so. But not it's an ancient rhythm. So it wasn't just given to me early in the morning, you know. Oh, yeah, I better get up because I've got to do this. It's, yeah, okay. Yeah. Let it unfold as well. Not always being in charge. We so love to be in charge, don't we, in the industrialized world?
Yeah, well, that's a big subtext of the industrialized world. Yeah.
So, you know, going forward with these, particularly this Haumanu collective,
which we were talking about earlier. Yeah.
Yes, which is taking place and the Porphyry tomorrow.
Is that what we're supposed to talk about for the last quarter of an hour, and we talk about other things?
I'd like to, in closing.
Yes.
Live and local. So Friday.
This Friday.
At the Old School Art Centre, this Friday. Three artists. I'm one of them, but I'm...
Oren Devlin and Ruth Power, the other two.
Yes, I'll be joined by my daughters to present a Tonga Puoro exploration and spoken word. So the spoken word is already of my mother's poetry, so I'll bring that into that space. Yeah.
And which instruments will you bring?
Oh, so we've got quite a significant collection between us.
Are there some of the ones that you've brought into the studio before?
It's a small offering of those, yes. Okay. Those will be mainly, we will navigate those and talk about them as well, just a little bit.
Yeah.
Not so much, you know, it's not a workshop. on the Tonga portal, but perhaps just to, you know.
People will be interested, for sure.
Yeah, I hope so. It's definitely feels important to do that within our local community.
Yeah. It's a good forum for it. It's a very supportive audience. So, yeah.
So we'll see how we go on this Friday.
Okay, so that, folks, that's live and local, 7:30 it says. Doors open at 7, koha entry, and you can buy drinks and I think you can buy food as well. I might be saying that out of turn, though. I'm not 100% certain. I was just looking at the poster. I didn't see the word food or drinks, but I've seen people buying things at the bottom of the stairs before they go up, so I know it happens. Something's happening.
Yeah. Oh, kia ora. I hope to see a few of you there. And yeah, that's me.
That's you. Thank you for coming in this morning, Nanganoa. And you'll be back. We'll see you on Friday, but you'll be back in the studio in a couple of weeks.
Yes. And then I want to especially touch on the koromiko, which was used in the First World War, First and Second World War, for dysentery. Ooh. Yeah.
Dysentery always sounded really bad.
Well, actually, it was one of the things that the Māori Battalion didn't have because of this that was sent to them. Yeah.
Ah.
The koromiko.
Interesting. And it might be interesting to hear back about the 5-day event happening.
Yes, of course. Love to. Love to share. Well. Yeah. It'll be Anzac Day. So perfect.
All right. Thanks for coming in.
Kia ora.